Today's briefing starts with a software supply chain incident that is useful precisely because it is not just another vague warning about NPM risk. The TanStack postmortem gives a concrete chain, a pull request workflow boundary, cached GitHub action state, and an identity token pulled from runner memory, followed by malicious package publication. We will use that as the main story, then quickly place it next to two Linux security moves, one home lab hardware signal, and one broader operating system sovereignty story.
The useful part is that the details move the discussion from general fear to specific operational posture. The written briefing says the attacker published 84 malicious versions across 42 TanStack scoped packages, and it also says the NPM publish workflow itself was not compromised. That distinction matters. It means the problem is not simply NPM is broken. It is that continuous integration trust boundaries, cache behavior, and short-lived identity material can form a publish path when they line up badly.
So the headline is not just compromised packages. It is how a modern automation chain can be used against itself. Before the deep dive, give me the radar map. What else made today's cut?
The second strong lane is Debian, making reproducible builds a hard requirement for the Debian 14 cycle, code named Forky. The briefing says that since May 9th, the project's migration software has blocked packages that fail a reproducibility check from entering testing, and that packages already in testing can also be blocked if they later break reproducibility. That is a supply chain trust move in a different register, slower, institutional, and preventative.
That pairs naturally with the TanStack story. One is an emergency postmortem after a fast package compromise. The other is a distribution changing the rules for what can move forward. What about the HomeLab thread?
The HomeLab item is a practical signal, not a primary source security announcement. Someone on the Level EdTech's forum is trying to split duties away from a very capable workstation. A Threadripper rig with an RTX 4090, fast memory, file sharing duties, light gaming, and growing local model interest.
And the new server would pick up storage and experimentation roles?
Yes. The proposed server would absorb NAS work, virtual machines, home security experimentation, Linux experimentation, and maybe local model work. It is not a universal recommendation, but it captures a pattern. Chris cares about home lab machines are becoming mixed infrastructure, not single-purpose boxes.
And that matters because the security stories are not abstract when the same box is running storage, experiments, virtual machines, and possibly local inference.
Exactly. The boundary between personal lab and production-like operations is getting thin. If your lab is where you test Linux, routing, local models, file storage, and automation, then build reproducibility, kernel mitigations and package chain hygiene are not enterprise, only concerns. They become household operational discipline.
The fourth item is a proposed Linux kernel kill switch. Explain that without making it sound like a finished kernel feature.
The briefing describes a proposal from Sasha Levin, an NVIDIA engineer and co-maintainer of stable and long-term support kernel trees. The mechanism is called kill switch, and the pitch is that administrators could disable a vulnerable kernel function on a running system. The timing is framed around rising Linux privilege escalation risk, including examples like copy fail and dirty frag. The important caveat is that this is a proposed mechanism as described in the source readout, not a magic safety layer that already solves live exploitation.
So, in the radar, we have package publishing, distribution reproducibility, home lab consolidation, and a possible runtime mitigation path. The last item is Harmony OS. It is less directly tied to Chris's stack, but it still says something about software sovereignty.
Right. The briefing's Harmony OS item is weaker as an operator action item, and the source is a curated write-up rather than an official technical spec. The useful takeaway is not that Chris should make a platform decision today. It is that domestic operating system adoption in China is now large enough to remain on the watch list, with the source claiming 55 million devices. It belongs as background for provider governance and open source ecosystem posture, not as the episode's deep dive.
Let's slow down on the TanStack compromise. The written briefing says the attacker chained pull request target behavior, cache poisoning across the fork to base trust boundary, and identity token extraction from runner memory. What should a listener hear in that chain?
The listener should hear several individually understandable automation choices combined into a published path. The pull request target pattern is powerful because it lets workflows run with privileges associated with the base repository. Hash behavior is powerful because it can preserve state across workflow contexts. OpenID Connect tokens are powerful because they are meant to let automation authenticate without static secrets. The postmortem, as summarized in the briefing, says the attacker used those pieces in sequence and reached package publication.
And the briefing says no NPM tokens were stolen. Why is that not reassuring enough by itself?
It is reassuring about one narrow thing. It says the attacker did not need to steal an NPM token and did not compromise the NPM publish workflow itself, but the incident still produced malicious versions. So the practical lesson is not, we are safe if NPM tokens are safe. It is, publication authority can be reached through other identity paths. If your security model assumes only long-lived tokens matter, this incident pushes you to inspect ephemeral credentials. Workflow boundaries, cache scope, and what runners can read while jobs execute.
The postmortem also recommends rotating credentials for anyone who installed affected versions during the incident window. The briefing names AWS, Google Cloud, Kubernetes, and Vault as examples. What does that imply about blast radius?
It implies the package payload risk was credential exposure in consuming environments, not merely package integrity in the registry. A malicious dependency can run in a developer machine, a CI job, or another automation environment that has access to cloud credentials, cluster credentials, or secret stores. So even if the publisher side is understood, consumers still need to assume that installing the affected versions could have exposed local or automation secrets. That is why rotation is not busy work here. It is how you shrink the downstream uncertainty.
The Hacker News reaction in the briefing is blunt. One representative comment calls it a mini-shy Hulud worm actively compromising legitimate NPM packages by hijacking CI and stealing developer secrets. Another asks whether people use the packages internally or monitor popular packages. How much weight should we put on that reaction?
Enough to understand practitioner fear, not enough to treat every analogy as settle fact. The useful reaction is that people immediately mapped the incident onto CI/CD hijacking and developer secret exposure. That tells us the concern is not isolated to TanStack users. It is about a pattern people recognize across JavaScript package ecosystems. But the official postmortem remains the anchor. The reaction layer helps frame urgency and operational questions. It should not overwrite the postmortem's narrower claims.
What would you do first if this were your environment and you learned that an affected package was installed in the relevant window?
First, I would follow the postmortem's consumer-side advice. Identify whether affected versions were installed, then rotate credentials that could have been exposed in that environment. That means looking at cloud credentials, Kubernetes access, Vault material, and any similar secrets available to the process that installed or ran the package. Second, I would preserve enough logs to understand where the package ran. Third, I would not stop at the package manager. I would inspect the CI jobs and developer machines that could have executed install scripts or dependency code.
And if the environment did not install affected versions, what is the defensive lesson?
Then the lesson shifts from incident response to architecture review. Review which workflows can run with base repository privileges, how caches are scoped between trusted and untrusted contexts, what identity tokens are available in jobs, and whether publish authority is separable from test authority. The briefing does not give a universal checklist, so I would keep this at the posture level, reduce cross-boundary trust, keep publish paths narrow, and assume ephemeral identity can be just as sensitive as stored tokens.
That connects to Debian. Reproducible builds do not prevent this NPM incident directly, but they come from the same desire to make software supply chains less faith-based. What changed in Debian's case?
The written briefing says Debian's release team made reproducible builds mandatory for the Debian 14 testing migration path. Since May 9th, migration software blocks packages failing reproducibility checks from entering testing. If a package already in testing later fails, it can be blocked as well. In plain terms, reproducibility moved from a nice property to a gate in the release process.
Why is that significant for operators who are not Debian maintainers?
because it is an example of trust becoming enforceable infrastructure rather than a best effort badge. Reproducible builds let independent builders arrive at the same artifact from the same source. That does not catch every attack, but it narrows the gap between we have source code and we can trust this binary came from that source. When a distribution makes that a migration requirement, it pushes the ecosystem toward evidence you can audit instead of reputation you inherit.
The source says packages that fail reproducibility are blocked from testing. Is there a risk of making the release process brittle?
Yes, and that is the trade-off to watch. Any hard gate can create maintenance pressure, especially for packages that are hard to build deterministically. The briefing does not quantify that burden, so we should not pretend we know how painful it will be. The point is that Debian is choosing to spend release process complexity on supply chain assurance. That is a meaningful signal, even if individual package maintainers have work ahead.
I like the contrast. TanStack shows a fast-moving automation compromise. Debian shows a slower institutional control. Then the Linux kill switch proposal sits somewhere in between, a runtime response to vulnerable functions. How should we place it?
Place it as a watchlist item with real potential but unfinished status. If administrators could disable a vulnerable kernel function on a running system, that could be valuable during a live privilege escalation wave. But the briefing's wording is careful. It says a patch has been proposed. It is pitched as a mechanism. It follows rising risk from Linux local privilege escalation vulnerabilities. That is not the same as saying every administrator can rely on it today.
What is the practical value of watching it now before it becomes a settled mechanism?
It tells us where kernel response thinking may be going. The traditional answer to kernel vulnerabilities is patch, reboot, and hope your maintenance window is fast enough. A function-level runtime disable mechanism would be a different kind of emergency lever. For home lab and production-like systems, the interesting question is whether future Linux hardening gives administrators more granular ways to reduce exposure while they wait for normal patch cycles.
But there is also danger in giving administrators a big red button.
Absolutely. Disabling kernel functions can break workloads, drivers, or assumptions in ways that are hard to predict. The briefing does not provide those design details. So the safest interpretation is promising direction, operationally sensitive, and worth tracking as it moves through review. It should not be marketed to yourself as a substitute for patch discipline.
Let's bring in the home lab rig item. It is a forum post, and it is personal. Why include it at all?
Because it captures the way modern home labs are absorbing responsibilities that used to be separate. The source describes a user with a powerful main rig handling file sharing, workflow, light gaming, and local model interest. They want a new server to take on NAS duties, virtual machines, home security experimentation, Linux experimentation, local model experiments, and some gaming. That is not a product launch, but it is a useful demand signal. People are building hybrid infrastructure at home because their workloads have become hybrid. So much of Beaters.
How does that change the way we interpret the security stories?
It makes them less distant. If your home lab has file storage, VM experimentation, local inference, and network services, then your exposure model starts to look like a miniature enterprise. You may not have enterprise staffing, but you do have supply chain dependencies, kernels, package managers, privileged services, and secrets. The TanStack incident, Debian reproducibility gate, and Linux kill switch proposal all become part of the same operational conversation.
Does the home lab item contain enough evidence for a broad hardware recommendation?
No, it is one forum thread, so it should not become a prescription. The responsible takeaway is narrower. Watch the workload pattern. Storage, virtualization, Linux migration, local model experimentation, and security experiments are increasingly being planned together. That pattern can influence how you think about isolation, power budget, memory backup, and what you expect the server to do. But it does not tell everyone to buy the same CPU or build the same box.
Now the Harmony OS story. The briefing says Huawei's open-source Harmony OS powers 55 million devices and frames it against Western restrictions and China's domestic software push. Where should that sit in the hierarchy?
below the supply chain and Linux items because the source readout is broader and less directly actionable for Chris's environment. Still, it is a useful governance watch item. The briefing's important point is that operating systems and databases are part of a domestic software surge in China, and Harmony OS adoption is presented as a visible example. For a daily briefing focused on infrastructure and provider posture, that belongs as context about ecosystem fragmentation and sovereignty, not as a call to action.
So if someone asks, should I care today? The answer is probably, care lightly, watch the direction, do not overfit.
Yes, it can affect long-term assumptions about platform markets, open source branding, and software supply chains under geopolitical pressure. But today's evidence does not require an immediate technical decision from this briefing. The TanStack, Debian, and Linux items are closer to operator behavior.
Let's return to the deep dive and make the evidence boundaries explicit. What do we know from the briefing about the TanStack incident?
We know the postmortem says the attack happened on May 11th. We know it involved pull request target behavior, cache poisoning across a fork-to-base trust boundary, and extraction of an OpenID Connect token from runner memory. We know it resulted in 84 malicious versions across 42 TanStack scoped packages on NPM. We know the postmortem says no NPM tokens were stolen, and the NPM publish workflow itself was not compromised. We know consumers who installed affected versions were advised to rotate sensitive credentials available in the affected environments.
What do we not know from the briefing?
We do not know every implementation detail of the exploit chain beyond the summarized facts. We do not know from this briefing whether the same chain applies unchanged to other projects. We do not know whether every consumer environment that installed an affected package exposed valuable credentials. We also do not know whether broader package ecosystem controls will change as a result. Those are follow-up questions, not facts to smuggle into the script.
Good. Now translate the incident into a mental model. If a team uses GitHub Actions and publishes packages, what is the model they should test against?
The model is, can an untrusted contribution influence a trusted workflow state, cache, or identity? If the answer is yes, can that influence reach publication or secret-bearing jobs? The incident says a fork-to-base trust boundary and cache poisoning mattered. So I would look for any path where a pull request can plant or modify state later consumed by a privileged workflow. I would also look for tokens that are meant to be short-lived but are still accessible to code running inside the job.
That is more useful than a generic secure your CI slogan.
It is. Secure your CI is too broad to act on. The specific posture questions are, which event types run with privilege? Which caches cross trust levels? Which jobs can mint identity tokens? What memory or environment material is readable to code in the job? And what step has permission to publish? You do not need this briefing to claim a universal exploit to use those questions. They are directly suggested by the chain described in the postmortem.
The written briefing says the source quality is community plus source read through. That is a funny category, not pure official, not pure community. How should we handle that?
Treat the official postmortem as the factual spine and the Hacker News discussion as the reaction layer. The official source supports the sequence and the response advice. The community reaction supports the fact that practitioners see this as a CI/CD and secret exposure event. The script should not quote every colorful comment, and it should definitely not turn a frustrated JavaScript is a mess reaction into analysis. It can use that reaction to show anxiety, then come back to the documented chain.
That also helps avoid sourcecraft in a spoken episode. We do not need to read the whole feed blurb, title suffixes, or comment fragments.
Exactly. Spoken briefing should translate sources into listener consequences. For TanStack, the consequences audit privileged workflow boundaries, cache scope, ephemeral identity, and consumer credential exposure. For Debian, the consequence is reproducible builds are moving into a release gate. For the kernel proposal, the consequence is runtime mitigation might become more granular, but it is still a proposal. For HomeLab, the consequence is mixed workloads need isolation discipline. For Harmony OS, the consequence is platform sovereignty remains a watchlist theme.
Let's spend a little more time on Debian. What does reproducible builds mandatory mean in everyday language?
It means that if the same package source is built in the intended way, the resulting artifact should match across builds. In everyday trust terms, it lets people check whether a binary corresponds to the source they think they are getting. The briefing says Debian's migration software now blocks packages failing the check from entering testing for the forky cycle. So the distribution is not merely encouraging the property, it is using it as a gate.
Why is that a supply chain answer rather than just a build system quality answer?
Because supply chain attacks often exploit the gap between source, build environment, and distributed artifact. If the build is reproducible, it becomes harder for hidden state, time-dependent behavior, or compromised build environments to pass unnoticed. It is not a complete defense. A malicious source can still build reproducibly, but it makes one part of the trust chain inspectable. That is why it belongs next to the NPM story, even though the mechanics are different.
Put the three security lanes side by side, TanStack, Debian, and Linux Kill Switch. What is the shared theme?
The shared theme is that trust is moving into operational mechanisms. TanStack shows what happens when automation trust boundaries are exploitable. Debian shows a distribution turning artifact verifiability into release policy. The Linux proposal shows kernel maintainers exploring a way to disable vulnerable functions while systems are running. All three are responses to the same pressure. Systems are too interconnected and too fast, moving for purely manual trust.
And the caution? And the caution?
The caution is that mechanisms can fail or create new complexity. CI controls can be bypassed if state crosses boundaries. Reproducibility gates can create maintenance friction. Runtime kill switches can break workloads or encourage false comfort. The point is not that any one mechanism is enough. The point is that each mechanism makes a part of the trust chain more explicit.
For Chris's local inference and home lab world, what should be watched over the next few cycles?
First, whether package ecosystems and CI platforms publish stronger guidance after the TanStack postmortem. Second, whether Debian's reproducibility gate produces practical breakage or becomes a new normal for distributions. Third, whether the Linux kill switch proposal gains review traction and what guardrails appear around it. Fourth, whether home lab builders keep converging storage, virtualization, security experiments, and local models on the same machines. Those signals would change how aggressively to isolate services and how much to invest in reproducible, auditable deployment paths.
Let's make this concrete. Suppose someone is running a personal automation stack with package installs, local services, and secrets. What is a measured response, not a panic response?
A measured response starts with inventory. Know which projects and package managers are in the critical path. Know where installs run, know which secrets are present during installs and builds. Then, separate jobs that need publish or deployment authority from jobs that only need test authority. Scope caches so untrusted inputs cannot poison trusted outputs. Keep service credentials rotatable. And when a specific incident names affected versions, check actual exposure before doing broad, performative cleanup.
That last point is important. The postmortem-driven advice is targeted. If affected versions were installed in the window, rotate credentials that could have been exposed. It is not burn everything down.
Right. Good incident response is specific. The briefing gives enough detail to avoid both extremes, ignoring it because NPM tokens were not stolen, and overreacting as if every system is proven compromised. The middle is to trace where affected packages ran and what they could access. That is disciplined enough for production and also realistic for a home lab.
How does this affect the daily briefing itself? The production notes say the slate is strong enough for a current lead 30-minute episode, but the written artifact also warns that the next harvest cycle should expand the evidence base. Is that a contradiction?
I would read it as a boundary. The TanStack and Debian lanes are strong enough to anchor a conversation today. The kernel and home lab lanes are useful supporting signals, but some items are still watchlist quality, and the briefing should not pretend otherwise. A 30-minute episode can work if it spends most of the time on the supply chain and reproducibility theme, not if it tries to inflate every radar item into an equal deep dive.
That is how we are structuring it. Radar first, then one main question. The main question is, after this postmortem, what should a practical operator believe about automation trust?
My answer is, automation trust is now a first-class supply chain dependency. It is not enough to protect the registry credential. You have to protect the path by which automation reaches publication, deployment, and secret-bearing environments. The TANstack incident makes that concrete. Debian's reproducibility gate shows a distribution hardening the artifact side. The Linux kill switch proposal points toward emergency runtime controls. A home lab builder should hear all of that as one message. Design for inspectable boundaries, not just convenient automation.
Where does uncertainty remain highest?
In how broadly the exact TANstack chain generalizes, how painful Debian's gate will be for maintainers, whether the kernel kill switch proposal becomes accepted and usable, and whether the Harmony OS adoption number translates into developer ecosystem shifts that matter outside China. Those are watch items that should guide the next briefing, not become overconfident conclusions today.
Let's touch the reading queue. If someone has 10 minutes, what should they read first?
Read the TANstack postmortem first, because it is the factual spine and gives the clearest operator implications. Then read the Debian reproducible build story, because it shows a contrasting institutional response. After that, bookmark the Linux kill switch proposal for kernel hardening context. The home lab and Harmony OS items are useful if you are tracking broader patterns, but they are not the first place to spend limited attention.
And if someone has only one action to take after listening?
Check where privileged automation and dependency installation overlap. If you publish packages, deploy services, or run builds with access to sensitive credentials, map which workflow events can influence those paths. That one review connects directly to the TANstack incident and indirectly to the broader theme of making software trust less implicit.
I want to underline one subtle point before we leave the supply chain section. A lot of teams think about dependency risk as something that starts after a package lands in the registry. This incident pushes the boundary earlier. The registry publication is the visible result, but the upstream path includes workflow triggers, runner state, and credentials that only exist because automation is trying to be helpful.
That is the right framing. The source readout says the NPM published workflow itself was not compromised, which means the successful publication came through adjacent trust machinery for an operator that is more uncomfortable than a single stolen token, because it says the system's intended flexibility can become part of the attack path. The issue is not that automation is bad. The issue is that every convenience boundary needs a threat model.
So when we talk about catches, we are not saying never catch. We are asking whether the catch has the same trust level as the job that later consumes it.
Exactly. Cache is performance infrastructure, but it can become trust infrastructure when privileged jobs reuse it. If untrusted code can influence cached state, and trusted code later consumes that state, the cache becomes a bridge. The briefing's TANstack summary specifically calls out cache poisoning across the fork to base boundary. That is why this is not just a package manager story. It is a workflow state story.
The identity token part has a similar lesson. Short-lived tokens are usually an improvement over static secrets, but they are not magic.
They reduce one class of risk, especially long-term credential theft. But if code running inside a job can reach token material in memory or the environment, short lifetime does not prevent misuse inside the attack window. Again, the briefing does not give every low-level exploit detail, so we should not invent one. The practical lesson is still solid. Treat token availability inside automation as sensitive, even when the token is temporary.
Bring that back to Debian for a moment. Reproducible builds address a different boundary, source to artifact. How does that complement CI hardening?
CI hardening asks whether the process that builds or publishes can be trusted. Reproducibility asks whether the resulting artifact can be independently checked against the source. Those are complementary because a secure process without verifiable artifacts still leaves trust concentrated in the builder, while reproducible artifacts without secure process control still do not protect you from malicious source or compromised maintainers. The stronger posture needs both constrained automation and inspectable outputs.
That is probably the strongest synthesis today. Make the hidden boundaries inspectable. workflow boundary, cache boundary, token boundary, source to artifact boundary, and maybe, in the kernel proposal, function level runtime boundary.
Yes, the phrase hidden boundaries is useful because users often see a single green checkmark. The build passed, the package published, the distribution accepted it, the kernel is patched or not patched. But underneath, there are layers of authority. Today's briefing is valuable because it shows several layers becoming visible at once.
What should not happen after a briefing like this is tool churn for its own sake. People can spend the next week replacing systems without changing the underlying trust model.
Right, the better response is to draw the map first. Which jobs can run with elevated repository context? Which caches cross contexts? Which credentials exist during installs? Which build artifacts can be reproduced? Which systems can tolerate a mitigation that disables functionality? Once those answers are visible, tooling choices become grounded. Without that map, new tools mostly create new blind spots.
That is also where the home lab item becomes more than a curiosity. A hybrid server is useful, but it concentrates roles.
And concentrated roles need explicit boundaries. If one machine is the NAS, the virtual machine host, the security lab, the Linux migration target, and a local model experiment box, then mistakes in one domain can affect others. That does not mean do not consolidate. It means consolidation should come with segmentation, backup discipline, least privilege, and a realistic sense of what secrets and services live together.
The written briefing keeps the home lab item in the watch list rather than the deep dive, and that feels right.
It does. It is an anecdotal signal about what people are trying to build. The deep dive belongs to the documented supply chain incident, but the anecdote helps explain why the incident matters outside professional package maintainers. Many technically capable users now run complicated local stacks, and they inherit the same classes of trust problem at smaller scale.
One more caution on the HarmonyOS story. It is tempting to turn any sovereignty story into a sweeping prediction.
We should avoid that. The briefing source frames Huawei and domestic software adoption in China, and it gives the 55 million device figure. That is enough to keep the trend visible. It is not enough, inside this episode, to forecast developer migration, app compatibility, or geopolitical outcomes. The clean placement is watch platform fragmentation and domestic operating system momentum as background pressure on software ecosystems.
So by the end of this episode, the listener should have one mental model and a few watch items, not five equal emergencies.
Exactly. The mental model is that software trust is becoming more operational and more layered. The watch items are the TanStack remediation trail, Debian's reproducibility enforcement, the Linux kill switch review path, home lab workload convergence, and the platform sovereignty backdrop. Only the first two demand immediate reading today.
Before we close, summarize the watch posture in one pass.
TanStack is the active incident to understand. A package compromise through automation trust boundaries with consumer credential rotation advice for affected installs. Debian is the structural move. Reproducible builds becoming mandatory in the testing migration path for the next release cycle.
And the supporting watch items?
The Linux kill switch proposal is the mitigation watch, possibly more granular runtime response, but still a proposal. The home lab thread is the workload signal, storage, virtualization, Linux migration, security experiments, and local model work are converging. HarmonyOS is the governance backdrop. Domestic platform adoption remains worth watching, but it is not today's operator action.
That gives us a clean close. Today's practical takeaway is not to distrust every package or every automation tool. It is to stop treating automation as neutral plumbing. The trust boundary around a workflow, a cache, a token, a build artifact, or a kernel function is part of the system. If you run infrastructure, even at home lab scale, those boundaries deserve the same attention as the services they support.
The healthier version of that attention is evidence-driven. Respond to the packages you actually installed. Rotate credentials that could actually have been exposed. Watch Debian's gate for real release process effects. Watch the kernel proposal for design and review details. Keep the broader operating system sovereignty story on the radar, but do not let it distract from the concrete supply chain work in front of you.
That is the briefing for May 12th. The written version has the source links and the watchlist notes. The main thing to carry forward is simple: supply chain trust is not one control. It is a set of boundaries, and today's stories show several of those boundaries becoming visible at once.